Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.
It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Get visibility like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow with the SEO queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. Your traffic's gonna explode. It's time to grow.
Welcome to the SEO Queen Tech Show, a podcast to help you get more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight. This podcast is for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We are broadcast all over the world through Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. Also, as a thank you gift for listening to the SEO Queen, you can always go to SEOQueen.com. That is SEOQUEEN.com and book a complimentary strategy session with me, your girl, Z Scott, the SEO Queen. Now go to SEOQueen.com and book a Reach More Clients Power session after you finish listening to my next guest. Today's guest is an author, speaker, CEO, venture capitalist. He has a bachelor's of science degree from UCR and a master's in organizational leadership. He wrote the book, Yes, Your Exit Strategy, that became an Amazon bestseller the day that it debuted. And you can download that today simply by going to yesyourexitstrategy.com. I want to introduce to some and present to others, none other than my friend, my brother in love, Mr. Bert Wright. How are you?
Great, Z. Thank you for having me on the show today. My pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm so happy that you're here, and I invited you onto the show because I wanted my listeners to know all about what you are doing. So before we go into, you know, what you're doing right now, which I find really, really fascinating, I wanted to ask you, like, what sparked your interest in entrepreneurship and business?
Well, it's kind of been in my bloodline. I guess I was fortunate or misfortunate, depending on how you look at it. My father and my mom had been entrepreneurs for most of my life growing up. So my dad was a general contractor based in construction space for many years. And then he transitioned into, when his body couldn't quite handle that level of work anymore, he became a real estate appraiser and inspector. So basically he would be the one to analyze a home that was either being bought or sold. And given that he had a contractor background, it was a perfect fit and an easy transition. So he knew how to analyze a piece of property and look at it and give comps. So when a realtor or a homeowner was looking to sell buy a home, he was one of the individuals they called for that. My mom, for many years, had her own daycare. This is when we used to live in LA, and you know, was one of the prominent daycare providers in South LA for, I can't remember. Pretty much all my playmates growing up when I was younger were the kids that she had in daycare, childcare. I think probably from like kindergarten up to almost sixth grade. So my house was always full with kids and different things. And so I remember my dad saying growing up that one of the ways to really control your future was to work for yourself, become an entrepreneur. So that led to that journey and where I've always had desire to become an entrepreneur. Yeah.
So no wonder you're such a charismatic person. You always had the kids around you all the time. That's awesome. So you have said that entrepreneurship is, and I want to make sure I quote you right on this, said that entrepreneurship is a vehicle for social change.
Mm-hmm.
You said that entrepreneurship is a vehicle for social change. Can you elaborate?
Yes, I mean, entrepreneurs, you know, there's a interesting comment that entrepreneurs' role in life is to find a problem to solve for a profit. And so they get paid to solve people's problems to some degree. And so part of that is realizing that there's, you can still do good by doing good for others or doing good in the community. So I believe entrepreneurship or entrepreneurs, depending on whatever level they are, whether they're a micropreneur, solopreneur, to the small business owner or large business owner, they provide revenue and opportunities for the community they're in. So that could be whether in taxes or providing jobs or hiring other service providers. And in that, that helps to hopefully create almost a ripple effect of wealth generation within a community. So I believe that entrepreneurs can be that vehicle for social change and have an impact not only on the owner's life, but also in the lives of others they touch. So that's what I mean by that. So I prefer to call myself a social entrepreneur because I believe that you use entrepreneurship as a vehicle to make a difference in your life and the lives around you. And so I always say that I really am a community activist. And entrepreneurship is my tool of choice, a weapon of choice to make change.
Okay, great. So I want to know, like, how did you get connected to Lisa Nichols and what do you do exactly for her? And then I also want to know, like, as a vehicle for social change, your entrepreneurship, doing what you do, like, how are you able to, how did you decide what you wanted to do to make a positive impact?
Well, the first question really came down to my wife. She was the first person involved in the motivating the masses community. And so she was there for a couple of years before I came on board. She really was in there for her own personal journey and her own personal development. And then I came back 2 years later because I saw her grow as a person and grow as my wife. And, you know, just so happens to answer your listeners, you know, my wife is your sister.
Right, my baby sister.
And so
yeah,
that seeing that journey, that process intrigued me to begin to wonder, well, what's going on over there? Maybe I should go over there and figure out for my own personal journey. From there, you know, I became a student on the campus and began to volunteer at different things. And then I was volunteering on our sales team. Fast forward a few years, an opportunity presented itself where she needed a new sales director with her event sales. And she extended me the opportunity, and then I kind of took it and ran with it. And now we've I now lead a global volunteer-based sales team that's generated multiple seven figures in a couple of years. So, and working with a lot of phenomenal people who are really transforming the world on a large scale. So it's been a blessing and incredible opportunity and exposure and just things I've grown as a person, as a man, as a leader, as a husband. I very grateful for that space a lot of ways.
Oh, that's awesome. So, you know, I think it's really incredible to, you know, that, you know, you and Exquisite work with, you know, Lisa, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, that's like the type of level, you know, we aspire to. You know, Lisa's, her company is publicly traded. She's known all over the world. She's a New York Times bestselling author. So what would you say are some of the lessons that you've learned, you know, working with Lisa and working as a volunteer and running her volunteer department?
I would say, sorry about that, the value of constantly growing as an individual can't be stated enough. You know, when you are a leader or you're in a space, as an entrepreneur, you're constantly in a state of motion, and hopefully that's forward motion, so that you're constantly propelling, you know, falling forward, or you're just taking steps to propel your life and your journey for what it is. That's probably the biggest thing that I've learned. Other things, realizing that as leaders, we're going to make mistakes, and the more you can own those mistakes, And the more you can be authentic in telling your team about the mistakes that may be coming up, makes it easy for them to acknowledge that, you know, as leaders, we still are human, right? We're not perfect beings. And so I learned that. And that last thing probably would be say that telling your team that, hey, we're going to try something new. And there's a part of being okay, being vulnerable in front of your team to realize that you don't always have all the answers as a leader, or you may not always have the best, the full map in front of you. So part of learning to trust your team, to ask them for their feedback and their insights, because they may have a perspective that as a leader, you may never thought of. Now, the decision still rests on your shoulders, but in that, your team trusts you because you trust them in that process. That's probably the biggest lesson I've learned in that process, being in that space, yeah.
So vulnerability and transparency are really important.
Yes, especially as a leader, you want to be authentic. You want to provide a space for transparency, and you want to provide a space for being vulnerable as a leader, and for the people that you are leading and who's in your space, who's under your care, because that's where you build the real trust going forward. Especially if it's a team of volunteers, you know, when you have employees, you always have the stick, right? The stick is threatening of being fired or you know, I can remove your paycheck. But when you're leading a volunteer, especially high identity volunteers, they're going to be pretty quick to understand, you know, they can see through the facade quickly. And so that requires a level of transparency, authenticity, and vulnerability, and at the same time, self-assuredness. You know, to understand that if you make a mistake, it is what it is. If you don't, if you do something that's right, you know, you get the guts and the glory as a leader. Right. And so that is the benefit of that space. And I give a lot of kudos for that. I've been in leadership spaces before for probably over 15 plus years, 20 plus years in different other volunteer organizations. So I realized I had just been preparing myself for a time such as this. Right. To be in that space. So that's a gave me kind of a leg up, and emotional intelligence. Also, I would also say that having a high degree of EQ, you know, emotional quotient, is important for a leader. Probably more so than skill set and technical set, because you can always train for techniques or train for technical skills. It's harder to train for EQ until you decide to learn it yourself.
So I have so many questions. You know, when you started talking about vulnerability and transparency, the only thing you didn't say is consistency, and that's the triangle of trust, the triangle of trust and leadership. And so happens in my mastermind a few days ago, my coach was talking about that. And so this is really, you know, great timing for us to have this conversation about leadership and what that means as an entrepreneur. So I'm going to just be really direct, and I hope I'm not putting you on the spot to ask you this, but how in the heck do you motivate high identity individuals to volunteer their time consistently?
Right.
How do you do that?
Well, to your point, you know, you mentioned the vulnerability, the consistency, and transparency, all tie into how of building trust as a leader. What you don't talk about is the importance of building relationships in those conversations and showing value in every conversation. You know, I know there's a phrase, and I know I'm going to butcher the phrase. I think it came from Maya Angelou. People don't always remember what you've told them, but they always remember how you made them feel. And so it doesn't matter what somebody is like just yesterday, I had a conversation with a friend of mine from my network. Very successful business owner, probably makes eight figures a year easily. And what I realized is why they stay in touch with me, because I make them feel valuable as a person, not as a business owner. If that makes sense. And so the same thing applies specifically when we deal with a volunteer organization or any leaders, is that the more a person feels valued and respected, the more apt they are to respond to the leader. So I always say that people, strange enough, will work for less if they're valued more than if you pay them more and they're valued less. So let me say that again. People will work for less if they feel more valued versus being paid more and they value less. So
That is so true. That is so true.
Yeah. So there needs to be some degree of value proposition, whether it's in respect, camaraderie, trust, acknowledgement when you have somebody on your team. And that's what motivates them to show up for you when you need, especially in the tough times. I always say it's one thing to have a team show for you when things are going good. It's the difference when they show for you when things are not as pleasant and you need to really dig in for those long days, those early mornings and long nights. And so that goes back to the trust, authenticity. So when things are good, those are prime times to develop those relationships with individuals on your team, especially your high value individuals that need, to say, how you doing? How's your day? How can I provide value to you? And if you understand the inverted matrix of being a leader,
right?
I serve them, and instead of they serving me, that when I need them, the quote unquote, I hate to use this phrase, but when I need them, to do work for me, it isn't a hard ask. That makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because, as a leader, as a CEO, I lead a team of about 6 full-time individuals and more. There's more part-time people as well. Uh-huh. And I find what you're saying is so true, because there was a time where I really didn't feel comfortable asking certain things of my team because I knew there were certain things that I hadn't done yet. Mm-hmm. And so now as a leader, every day I ask my team, what can I do to support you? What are your personal and professional goals? Let's all work together and support each other and all the goals that we want to obtain. And it, to me, is just so awesome to see like some of the goals that even we shared like towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year, that I see people on my team, they're achieving their personal goals.
Right.
And it's because, I'm consistent as a leader. I'm transparent. I tell them when something isn't good. I don't sweep it under the rug. And if I mess up, I let them know it too. So right. I think this conversation about, leadership is very valuable because I think a lot of times, I don't think entrepreneurs really see themselves mm-hmm. as leaders.
And well,
I don't think some entrepreneurs see themselves as leaders. And I also think that, I can say this because this is kind of what I thought when, earlier in my entrepreneurial journey, when I was, building up to where I am now, I thought, once I build it, once I hire the person, they'll get it. And I didn't understand there's a process. You have to put the standard operating procedures in place. You have to get everything that's out of your head and communicate that. And I mean, it's a lot of work to build an organization. So,
and to that point, two things I want to share is, as the entrepreneur, there's two tracks I want to share. One is, especially the entrepreneur who builds out a business and creates a team and starts hiring a team, then their role shifts. They go from serving the end user, which quote unquote would be the consumer, to now their job is to serve. So they're the entrepreneur. Part of business owners, new end user is not the quote unquote the consumer. It is now their staff. And it is the job of the staff to serve the end user, which is their consumer, whoever that may be, whether it's a business or whether it's a consumer-based individual. And so sometimes entrepreneurs forget that. They don't realize that now their roles have shifted. To the other side of that equation is that entrepreneurs have to have a high degree of self-awareness to realize that if they really are a technician more so than a CEO, then they need to figure out how are how to best hire for those gaps in their skill sets. Because some people really are great technicians, some are great executioners, some are great people skills, great have people capacities. And so when that change shifts and they're trying to grow, one of the reasons why entrepreneurs stay so small is because they can't outgrow themselves. So they have to hire people that can do jobs better than themselves to grow the business. And that's one of the reasons why I think to that point of any entrepreneur who recognizes that they have gaps, hire for their gaps. And that could even include they're great, they love being a technician, they hate doing the visionary stuff or hate doing the work stuff. And that's kind of part of the equation.
You know what? You know, I'm so happy that we're having this conversation because this is like perfect timing because I'm literally in the midst of that shift. Like I had this epiphany. It's like, I need to, as an entrepreneur, I need to take everything that I know to do and create the processes that mimic my analysis process and my execution process. And so when you said that, the reason why a lot of entrepreneurs stagnate and aren't able to grow their revenue and their organization beyond themselves is because they get stuck in the day-to-day and being client-facing.
Yep.
And I literally am right now at this very moment have like, I'm learning to let go. You know that trust exercise when you go on retreats and you know, you put your hands over your crisscross applesauce over your chest and then you fall back and you expect people to catch you. I'm doing that with my business right now. I'm expecting my team to catch me and they're catching me. I literally logged into our, when we did our daily huddle yesterday, I went into our project management tool and my mind was blown because this whole project for a client was completed.
Yep.
And I didn't have to touch a thing. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Well,
so that is the goal.
One of the valuable aspects of that is, so a lot of what I've shared, I think when I talk about how entrepreneurs are always in constant forward motion, which includes even growing and learning. For example, you have a coach. I read a lot of books. And I've had some other coaches in my life. Like, so I'm referencing the book, The E-Myth by Michael Gerber. It talks about working in, the difference between working in your business versus on your business. And so when leaders, so entrepreneurs have leadership tendencies, but that does not always mean they are a leader themselves. And that shift means that they're okay to accept that they have to be willing to release the fail and see failure as an opportunity to grow and always fail forward, right? So when, but in that failure process, it empowers the team to be okay to say, one thing I tell my team all the time, like, look, I give you permission to fail. I will always be there to catch you and be a covering. What I'm going to ask is that, what can we learn from this failure so we don't repeat it again? And so that gives teammates the courage to push the boundaries to learn and grow. Because if their intention, I always judge their intention, not their actions. If their intention is to solve the problem and to try to best serve the client or the company or the goals we have established, and in that there is some failure, whatever that's defined as, I don't have a problem with that. I'm going to just say, how can we analyze it and what you learn from that and how can we grow? And that's the only way your team runs faster, smarter, stronger in a lot of ways, right? But the problem is oftentimes entrepreneurs always feel that they have to be the end all be all. Now, as an entrepreneur, the buck always stops with you. Don't get it twisted. It doesn't mean you get to you know, release yourself of responsibility, especially because most people are the owner and founders of the company. However, when they empower their team, they will rise to the occasion. And if they don't, you know, you realize it's time to move on. So that is the value of leadership that creates a safe space for the team to grow and manifest to their maximum capacity from that. So I would say that's definitely a huge lesson to learn from as leaders and as we grow and as we move forward from that standpoint there too. So yeah, that's what I would share. Good books on leadership. There's a few I'd recommend. The last one I read was called The Culture Code. I can't remember, sorry, I forget what the author is. John Maxwell books are always really great starting points. The first one I ever read from John Maxwell was called The 21 Irrefutable Laws on Leadership. Probably one of my favorite chapters is The Law of the Lid. Your team would never grow faster than you as you grow as a leader. So that is a blessing and a curse. So if you are a level 7 leader and you have level 5 individuals on your team, it's not so bad. But you still got to keep growing. What begins to happen is if your level 5 individuals grow to a level 7 and you're still a level 7, they will create conflict because at some point now you realize the leadership capacity is the same. Further, on the other side, if someone is a level 7 leader and they hire a level 9 individual, then it needs to figure out how to build what I call consistency building, because that level 9 person will easily recognize that they may work for somebody who doesn't have the same level of leadership capacity. So as a level 7 leader, is recognizing where do you put them in their strongest situation to grow and maximize their skill sets for what they are. So I would say that's definitely something to think about.
So I have a question for you. So as you know, business owners are building their team and they're hiring, how do they recognize and assess the leadership capacity of their team members?
I'm sure there's numerous ways to do that. Part of some people will naturally rise to the occasion. Some will need to be put in situations where you ask them to lead or you invite them to lead a project. So that's probably the two main things. Some will naturally want to step up to the occasion and provide feedback and automatically. And other ones will say, hey, you know, but you go ask them. You mentioned earlier for us asking your team and their personal and professional goals. So to that point, you know, there may be a time where you may assign them particular projects or tasks and let them work on it by themselves without providing any real guidance. One of the things I share with my team when I lead myself's team is I always say, how will you work through the problem? Because when you lead a sales organization with sales team members, I can't figure out every hypothetical situation. What I'm wanting to see is how do they process the situation and work their way through it. So part of it is just trial and error, part of it is just experimentation and see how they proceed and rise to the occasion. So that's what I probably say first. And then ask, do they want leadership capacity? Do they want leadership roles? Mm-hmm. Some people don't. And so I just ask point blank, are you open to the idea of serving as a leader? I ask a lot of people, are you open to serving as a leader? Are you interested in serving as a leader? If so, I can provide you some additional resources and opportunities to do so.
Wow. That's awesome. You know, I think leadership is something that I was interested in at a very young age. I remember in elementary school running for student council, mm-hmm. and just wanting to serve in that way.
Yep.
Can you share your experience of your leadership throughout school and how that impacted you as an entrepreneur?
That's a funny thing. So in transparency moments, I've only come to accept. So I've always been in leadership roles for a long time in different ways, whether it was a small team or larger projects. The irony is I would always say I have the servant leader mindset, servant leader heart. The irony of that is I never desired or sought out leadership roles, if that makes sense. I never really sought the acquisition of power for some folks or the title. So I never had desire to run for school government or these other roles when I was in high school or elementary school or different things. However, people would appear to have this natural capacity to attract people to me when I spoke. or when I share certain things, or when I plan stuff, so I'll let my work speak for itself, which is fascinating. It's only been the past few years I've actually had used the word that I'm a leader, and I have the capacity to influence situations. So I don't know if I answered your question there, Z, but I just kind of sharing my transparent thoughts about that, how it's played out. It's only in the past couple of years, like I've said, I'm like, okay, I can be an agent of change. I can influence the world around me, and I desire to do so. So.
Well,
yeah.
No, you had said something earlier about, you know, the important attributes of a leader. You said that a leader should be vulnerable, transparent, authentic, have emotional intelligence. And then finally, and this is the one I wanted to ask you about, is being self-aware, that personal growth piece.
Yeah.
What are three things that you think every leader should adopt to become more self-aware?
Self-awareness. Man, that's such a fascinating conversation. Self-awareness probably starts with compassion. The first being compassion for self, because I think as leaders, it is so easy to second guess our thoughts, our decisions, our actions, especially when we're looking to make a decision in front of an entire team. Then a compassion leads to the people that we do lead with and understanding how our decisions are going to impact them for what we do. Then I would say, obviously, courage comes into play. I know it sounds kind of corny, but I would say courage, because obviously at some point a decision is going to need to be made from that. And it comes with self-awareness and then clarity. So the more clear on who we are as people, not necessarily in relationship to other people, just relationship to who we are, the better we get to know who we are and ourselves, that level of inner clarity makes it easier to have external clarity for us, how we operate as leaders in different spaces. Because the more you get to know who you are and how you operate and how you think and reason about the world and your decisions and your personal philosophies, it makes it easier for people to respond to you and attract the right individuals that are in alignment with that same energy. So I would say, you know, compassion for yourself, compassion for the team you lead, courage for yourself, courage to stand for your team and make declarations, and then clarity of self. And then that makes it easy to be clear as far as your external statements and different things.
Yeah. You know, I think what you said, you know, it resonates with me, because, you know, that personal growth piece, that self-reflection piece, mm-hmm. is important to me, because I remember when I had good bosses and bosses from hell. Yeah. I remember when I worked in organizations I was excited to be a part of, and I remember how the honeymoon period didn't last long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I never want to create an environment for my team where they feel that way towards me.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't think there's any money in the world that anybody can pay anybody to be disrespected and not appreciated and just treated bad. I mean, I just don't think that because you work for a company or, you know, you deserve abuse in any way. I just don't believe that. So I think the self-awareness piece is so important for great leadership, because it allows you to really, you know, reflect on and level up in how you communicate and how you strategize and really seeing things for what they are rather than what you want them to be or what you imagine them to be. And I think that self-awareness piece is huge.
I'm sorry, real quick, Jim, cut you off real quick. But far as that point of self-awareness and talking to your team, so there's an interesting dance between, you mentioned earlier, far as awareness, far as the current realities versus what you want them to be. You know, leaders are in this interesting space of casting a vision that's large enough to get people motivated and excited, but also mindful of the realities of the journey to get there, right? So whatever that vision is why people decide to follow somebody. But if leaders aren't transparent on what it's going to take to get there, I mean, you can choose any example. Let's choose working out. I mean, I think working out is exercise. It is. Everybody wants to lose weight at some point.
But nobody wants to work out.
Right. Nobody wants to work out. Right. So if a personal trainer shares that I can get you a 6-pack abs or whatever it is, but doesn't talk about the journey of having to watch what you eat and exercise 4 days a week and these type of things, then it's not being authentic and transparent in what it's really going to take. So same thing applies to as leaders. Like if a leader is trying to take their team from A to Z or A to C or whatever it is.
Or from 6 to 7 figures.
Right. And don't explain what it's going to take to get there, then the team is not going to trust the leader because they failed to give them the real story. Now, to that point, this is strictly, you know, higher leadership conversations. Should you tell your team everything? That's debatable. I think that there's a time and place to share certain pieces of information. But there's also time and place to share enough where they feel like they understand the journey and they have a true idea on what it's going to take. You know, if so, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. There's so much more I can say about that. But I think there's a dance between sharing enough transparency so that they have buy-in, but don't feel like, that doesn't mean you have to share them every single detail. Now, everybody's different. You know, some companies different, and some companies will put the entire P&Ls, the things company servers. But I think you have to decide if that fits your culture, and if it does, then that makes sense for you.
Right. So, I mean, I think, you know, that's some really great advice. You know, leadership. Mm-hmm. Leadership is important to determine the direction of an organization. Leadership is important when making, you know, decisions. Mm-hmm. I think what you talked about in terms of that transition from a technician and practitioner to a strategic vision and support is key to scale. Yeah. I think just the self-awareness piece, I mean, that's, you know, I literally, like, I think if I wasn't aware of the fact that I mess up and my communication isn't always effective with my team, I would have said some things that I wouldn't have understood why my team reacted that way. So that self-awareness piece is critical.
Right.
So I have another question for you before we go. This is my final question for you.
Okay.
Because you've dropped a lot of golden nuggets today, and I'm really grateful. So my philosophy, when something goes wrong or a team member, there's a disconnect somewhere, my first response has been and always is, what did I do wrong? Where communication or resources broke down, what can I do to support this? That's always my first question. And so I'll go back through the communication chain. I'll look at that. I'll look at the resources. I'll look at a bunch of different things to determine, you know, why things didn't go the way I expected them to go. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing I found is that my whole team was on slow internet speed. Mm-hmm. Connection. So we started paying for people's internet. Problem solved.
Right.
So that's just like one example. So what when you talk about self-reflection and really serving your team, making that transition, what are three things that an entrepreneur can do now to really be mindful of making that transition as smoothly as possible?
Well, I'm going to go back to a phrase. I've known of the concepts for years, but you know, my coach, Lisa Nichols, shared it best in this acronym. And I joke about, we all have this pet at home somewhere or in our business, but we don't realize it. So we all have a cat that we keep as a pet somewhere. And CAT is an acronym for clarity, accountability, and training. So when there is a breakdown somewhere once one's team, that is kind of like the rubric to look at. You know, where was I properly clear in my expectations, and to allow the teammate to be clear on when they can deliver what I desire. So let me give an example. So if I am making a request for a project, let's say whatever it is, and I'm very clear, they express that they are very clear, they get what I'm asking for, were they clear in sharing what is their realistic time goal for delivering what is desired? So let's say they say, Brett, I can deliver this in 2 weeks, which goes back to A in regards to the A part of accountability. But realistically, they really need 4 weeks. Well, I would rather they tell me 4 weeks than 2 weeks, because then I will mentally prepare to receive it in 4 weeks, unless it's something that needs, you know, rapid attention with our, right? So right. The accountability part goes down, and it's, okay, how can we hold each other accountable? When are we, can I expect, you know, expect this to be to delivered for whatever it is? And in that space of accountability, if it gets to the 4 week mark, no, let me back up. If it gets to the three week mark and there's some snafu, that means it may take longer than expected to deliver this project, then the accountability partner on behalf of the staff member or team member is to say, hey, you know, Mr. Business Entrepreneur, there's been a snafu or whatever it is, there's been a hold up, and the newly appointed deliverable time is another week or so, or 2 weeks, whatever, right? So it's been accountable on behalf of the owner, and the employee or staff member be accountable to themselves and to the organization to be upfront to say, hey, this is gonna take longer than I expected, or I can get to you sooner, whatever, right? And the last one's training part. And did they provide, not as you know, not everybody may know, I used to be a former school teacher. So one of my teacher mentors would always say, if your entire class fails, that is not a sign of the students, that's a sign of you as a teacher. You didn't give them all the tools to succeed. However, if you did everything you're supposed to do to provide all the resources to be successful, and you have some student failures, that's more on the student, more so than on you. So I've always held that philosophy when it comes to training staff is, did I give them all the tools possibly to succeed to the best of my ability, based on what I know at that standpoint. One of the problems we face as we gain subject matter expertise and whatever it is, that we often forget what we didn't know at one point. So now it goes back to training the staff to ask the questions of, hey, if you don't know something, ask me, because I might have forgotten to teach you something that I now do automatically that you wouldn't know to ask.
Can you say that again? Can you please say that again? And I say it two more times, because there's an entrepreneur listening to this that I need them to get that in their spirit.
Right.
So, get that, please, in your spirit.
So I would say, when you're training somebody and you provide them all the tools you need to succeed, if you have achieved a certain level of subject matter expertise and whatever it is, and you're training somebody, we have forgotten more than we have taught. And sometimes we forget to teach things we once did not know. So because of that, we forget that the staff member doesn't know the questions to ask that we knew to ask back then. So you want to remind your staff to say, ask me the questions that I forgot to teach you about, because I don't mean I always remember what I should have taught you, because I don't remember it's been so long since I've been at that stage of growth. So empower your team to be okay with asking the questions, saying I don't know, and ask those questions. That is the process there too. So hopefully that made sense.
Well, you know what? On that note, I have to say thank you so much, Bert Wright, for coming through, because, you know, us entrepreneurs who are trying to make this vision come to pass and build a team, we need help. We need some golden nuggets, and you definitely shared them today. So I just want to say thank you so much. That last point about we've forgotten more things than we've taught. That's a that's a good one. That's a good one, because I have to remember that. And yeah, I have to remember that.
It's real. It's real. Like it's real.
It's real. That resonated. That
Real.
truly resonated. So I just want to thank all the listeners who've tuned in to the SEO Queen Tech Show. And again, I am still just so grateful to all the listeners who made the SEO Queen Tech Show the number one show in February 2022. Please, please, please keep that same energy coming. Please. That just made me just feel so good and appreciate it. And I'm trying hard to bring you guys some golden nuggets to help bring you more credibility, visibility, and profitability through inspiration, technology, and marketing insight for your business. This podcast is always for professionals and entrepreneurs who are looking to get more customers, clients, and patients. We're broadcast on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. And don't forget, you can listen to the SEO Queen Tech Show on any mobile phone or tablet device. And if you're listening on the Bashani Radio app, you can always hit that feedback button and send me a voice note. And who knows, you might hear yourself, hear your comment or question on the air. If you have an SEO question, please ask me anything. Hit that mic button. I would be very happy to answer those SEO questions. And also, before I forget, the SEO Queen Reach More Clients Power Conference is happening July 23rd, 2022 in the gorgeous Long Beach Hilton, downtown Long Beach on Ocean Avenue. You can go to seoqueen.com/conference to buy a ticket. Dante Lee and Ira Dominance are going to be the three speakers in person, in the flesh. It's going to be an awesome, awesome event. And don't forget, if you do have a question and you want to answer now, you can always go to seoqueen.com and book a complimentary strategy session with me. So without further ado, with all minds are clear, I just want to say thank you again, Mr. Burt Wright, for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And until next time.
It's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Get visibility like never before. When traffic's gonna explode, it's time to grow with the SEO Queen. Receive the perfect leads like never before. When traffic's gonna explode, it's time to grow.
Queens, the Bronx, Stat, and money-making Manhattan. You're listening to Bashani Radio App, the number one independent app for podcast. Download for free for iPhone and Android at the App Store.